Shabbat Shalom. 2 weeks ago, I had the opportunity to speak at the Knesset in a caucus session on the subject of diaspora Jewry's relationship with Israel. It was an experience both thrilling and humbling to walk the halls of the Knesset, to meet with Israeli leadership, to see the Chagall tapestries, and most of all, to present on behalf of American Jewry. My remarks are posted on the synagogue website and published in the Jerusalem Post in English and just yesterday in Haaretz in Hebrew. I addressed the lack of religious pluralism in Israel, an Israel that doesn't recognize the Judaism we practice here in the States, an Israel that doesn't acknowledge the marriages or conversions of American rabbis, an Israel that has allowed the symbol of Jewish unity, the Kotel, to become ground zero for fanaticism and intolerance. I delivered my remarks the week of the abstention of the United States at the UN, warning of the injurious consequences of an Israel that insists on alienating the most ardent diaspora supporters. It's a conversation that I hope picks up steam. It's a cause over which I hope our community is able to mobilize. And it was a day that I will not soon forget. So you might find it surprising that today I want to speak to you not about what I said, but what was said by others in the room. Two separate but interrelated conversations that I believe signal a fascinating and potentially promising development in the Jewish world. The first was a comment made by Rav Chaim Amsalem, a founding member of the right-wing Shas political party, and now a political force in his own right, a brilliant scholar and fiery personality. Given his profile, it was surprising to me to hear Rav Amsalem upbraid his Orthodox colleagues for unnecessarily increasing stringencies on matters of Jewish identity. In raising the barriers to Jewish engagement, he reasoned, Orthodoxy was not only failing to stem the tide of assimilation, but were liable as contributories towards it. Don't get me wrong, neither Rav Amsalem nor his colleagues are meet you where you are sorts of rabbis. The Judaism we practice here at Park Avenue Synagogue would be both foreign and entirely objectionable to them. And yet here I was listening to a voice of inclusivity that I had never heard from a Haredi rabbi, namely that it's the responsibility of religious leaders, Orthodox included, to provide on-ramps, not obstacles, to those seeking entree into the Jewish world. The second connected comment was voiced by several present, including Natan Sharansky, the chair of the Jewish Agency and former famous refusnik. Sharansky explained that what the Israeli public, especially Orthodox, fail to understand is a critical role that liberal Judaism plays as a last line of defense against assimilation. For far too long, the Orthodox community has operated on the mistaken and misguided belief that liberal Judaism is the root cause of assimilation, a deviant expression of Judaism which is to blame for a slackening of Jewish observance, a rise in intermarriage, and the unraveling of our people's communal bonds. Not so, said Sharansky. First of all, as one sociologist present in the Knesset explained that day, there's not a correlative relationship between the presence of liberal Judaism and assimilation. Intermarriage rates are just as high in countries in which there's no conservative or reform movement. Second, and this is the important part, were it not for liberal Judaism, just imagine how dire our people's condition would be. Just imagine where our numbers would stand. Thank God, we should say, Sharansky said, for the liberal movements, because they are the ones on the front line of the modern Jews' battle against assimilation. Before I move forward, as a conservative Jew, I need to at least note that there's something mildly or perhaps deeply offensive about the views voiced in the Knesset chamber. Because while the role of liberal Judaism in the fight against or the fight for the Jewish future was acknowledged, the reason given was not a terribly flattering one. We are, in their eyes, the last line of defense before the modern Jew falls into the abyss of secularism and assimilation. The beer goggles, denominationally speaking, one puts on as last call is announced at the bar. I'll explain that to you, Cantor, later. I, for one, have consciously chosen to be a conservative Jew and conservative rabbi because I believe it to be the most authentic and compelling expression of Jewish life today, not as some desperate act of resignation. In the minds of the mostly Israeli and Orthodox crowd that day, whatever merits the liberal movements have, those merits are instrumental, not intrinsic. At best, a backhanded compliment, and at worst, a rather harsh assessment of the religious branches of the vast majority of American Jews. But be that as it may, it was their remarks, not those that I delivered, that I've thought most about since that day. The combination of Orthodoxy's stated desire to bring Jews into the fold and the characterization of conservative and reform Judaism as bulwarks against and not contributories towards assimilation was an eye-opening turn of events, not for me, but for those with a sense of Jewish history in the much wider arc of our people's story. Let me explain. For the past 200 or so years, as Adam Furziger explains in a masterful article, Orthodox Judaism's attitudes towards reform and conservative movements have been dominated by animosity and polemics. The flowering of the reform movement in early 19th century Germany reflected a process of acculturation, one in which German Jews and then American Jews felt an incongruity between their world of origins and the modern world with which they identified and which they longed to participate. Be it changes in prayer, Jewish observance, or the definitions of communal boundaries, the driving thrust of Reform Judaism, according to the great scholar Michael Meyer, was to create, quote, an ideology of integrating tradition with changing modern life. The subsequent emergence of Orthodoxy, a movement that had hitherto never existed, was a reaction against this reformist principle, a denominational objection against the assimilationist impulse of Reform Jews. Most famously, I think of Rabbi Moses Sofer, the Chatam Sofer, the Orthodox ideologue who taught that for a Jew to remain shalem, whole and authentic, they must retain their names, their shemot, their language, lashon, and their dress, malbush. And on matters of Jewish law, chadash asur min haTorah, any innovation strictly forbidden by the Torah. Thus the poles of the debate were set. It wasn't just that the liberal movement sought to innovate as Orthodoxy sought to preserve, but rather a sharp antagonism developed within Orthodoxy against the liberal movements. Given that the point of the Reform movement, even as stated by its own adherents and advocates, was to accommodate Judaism to secular society, one can understand why Orthodoxy perceived it to be the first step on that slippery slope towards assimilation. Guilty not just of their own sin, but of causing others to sin, we were worse than secular atheists in that we misrepresented Judaism to the masses. Our prayer books were burned, our rabbis excommunicated, and intercommunal dialogue was to be avoided at all costs for fears of granting legitimacy to deviant expressions of Jewish life and living. I presently, and maybe you do too, have vivid memories of Orthodox family members of mine refusing to set foot into the conservative synagogue in which I grew up. Better not to go to shul at all, the thinking goes, than step into a cathedral of heresy. And so it was, and in many cases remains, the state of affairs within the Orthodox Jewish world. But what I saw in that Knesset session was that there were those who realized that the Jewish world has changed over the past 200 years. First of all, there seems to be a consensus across the Jewish world that modernity is not just a passing fad. It's actually here to stay. The raison d'etre of liberal Judaism to reform Judaism to fit the needs of secular society has run its course. No longer is the point of the progressive movements to innovate, to explain why driving should be halakhically permissible on Shabbat, why swordfish is in fact kosher, or why or how the Bible is still sacred even if authored by human hands. What the reform movement, but really all liberal movements, came to understand is that their present task must be one of Jewish retrieval and renewal, explaining our tradition, bringing the wayward Jew back into the fold, and reasserting the power of tradition in the face of the counterclaims of modernity. Most famously, the 1999 rewriting of the Statement of Reform Judaism, a revision that called on Reform Jews to return to tradition and affirm the centrality of the mitzvot, a call to arms unimaginable to prior generations of Reform Jews. So the light bulb, as it were, that went off was that a more self-assured orthodoxy understood that not only need it not be threatened by liberal Judaism, but that liberal Judaism was in fact fighting the same battle and on the same side. We're all fighting for the Jewish future. We're all in this together. There are, to be sure, profound differences, but the differences are differences of degree, not of kind. Orthodoxy began to realize, as Chabad did long ago, that its target demographic was the same Pintele Yid, the same lost spark embedded in the heart of every Jew. As intimated by my dear new friend and colleague, Rabbi Chaim Steinmetz, at KJ a few weeks ago, when he invited me and Rabbi Buchdahl of Central Synagogue into his Orthodox shul, unto itself a sign of changing times. An orthodoxy that believes in itself is an orthodoxy that is willing to be more inclusive in its embrace of American Jewry. Finally, there seemed to be an acknowledgement that all that energy spent on Shrine Gvalt over liberal Judaism would be better spent capturing the hearts and souls of American Jews. The story's not yet over, and a host of contentious issues remains on our communal docket. I, for one, don't love my spiritual ideals being branded as the last stop before damnation, and frankly, neither should you. Liberal conversions aren't acknowledged by the Israeli rabbinate. Issues of funding, religious pluralism, and respectful dialogue remain unresolved, and there are all sorts of prickly issues, both in Israel and in America, on the who is a Jew question that still need to be answered. And yet, I am hopeful. I can make out what could one day be a silver lining to the historic inner divisions of our people. As my mentor and former Hillel director Michael Brooks once said to me, for a people so small, we Jews have an unfortunate knack for drawing lines, further separating us into even smaller subdivisions. At the end of the day, he said, the only line that really matters is whether you're inside or outside the Jewish conversation, and we should all work hard to bring more and more people inside of that line. In the final moments of Jacob's life, Joseph brings his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, to receive a final blessing from their grandfather. The lads have grown up in the diaspora, assimilated Egyptians in name, in language, and in dress, indistinguishable from any other youth of their day. So assimilated were Ephraim and Manasseh that as they approached their father, Jacob asked Joseph, "Mi ele?" Who are they? It's a heartbreaking question, the passage of just one generation and grandchildren that are unrecognizable to their dying grandfather. Joseph responds to his father, "These are my sons whom God has given me here." To which Jacob replies, "Kachem na elai v'avarchem," bring them close to me that I shall bless them. At which point he blesses the boys with words that are used by parents to their children to this very day. Orthodox, conservative, reform, it doesn't matter. There are Jewish souls in the balance. Jews so alienated from our people, from our tradition, that we could imagine someone, perhaps even ourselves, saying, "Mi ele, who are they? Why should I care? They are lost to our people, just let them be." Not us, not here, not ever. Like our forefather Jacob, we bring them close. We bestow upon them our blessing. They are, after all, our children and our grandchildren. May all the arms of the Jewish world work in common cause, coming together to bring Jews closer, always remembering that whatever our differences may be, we are all in this together. Shabbat Shalom.